Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. Eddie Pence is on daddy duty tonight. That didn't just sound right, daddy duty. But anyways, he's babysitting his own child, so we'll call that parenting. But anyways, I'd like to just jump right into the interview. We've got singer, artist, producer, SJ. Say hello, SJ.
Hi, SJ.
Ooh. All the way from the UK, correct?
Yes, born and raised in Wales. Spent a while in London and then legged it out here 10 years ago.
Where did you live in London?
Everywhere. Where didn't I live in London?
Camden's my favorite.
I actually didn't live in Camden.
Oh! Why not?
I don't know.
What about Notting Hill? Did you live in Notting Hill?
I lived in Chiswick, which
okay.
is not far.
That's,
West London.
Yeah, that's nice.
Do like West London a lot.
I love all of London.
Yeah.
Do you miss it, being here?
I miss my friends and I miss the people, but I don't miss the weather. I don't miss waiting for a bus in the rain for half an hour.
Oh,
my brolly turned inside out. If I never have to do that again, it will be too soon.
But the public transportation is amazing too.
It is.
That's the one thing I love, but it's nice driving.
I love it here,
yes.
I have to say.
That's me too. It's
the
best. It is the best. So we're going to go way back.
Let's do it.
What was the moment that made you want to become an artist, producer, singer, or to just work in music?
There was two moments when I was little that I didn't really realize until later on that they were defining moments. And one was when I was four. And I used to go around to my next door neighbor's house and bang on her piano and drive her crazy with my pigtails. And one day she tried to bribe me to go home and say, you know, you can have your tea and then you can come back and you can play again. I go home, I start throwing a massive tantrum with my parents. She said I could come back. She was really trying to get rid of me. I was annoying. And threw a big tantrum, you know, got a smack bum off my dad, went to bed with no tea. And then they got me piano lessons.
That's huge in England. That's huge.
Got me piano lessons. And so that was that. And then when I was 12, my dad, who's awesome, bought me my first synth, which had 8 tracks on it.
Wow.
And
that's forward thinking of him.
Yeah, and you know, like, even though there's not many girls that do or seem to do production or technical stuff, like, my dad never thought about that. He was like, you can play, you're gonna program music, here's your synth. And I did it, and I was
programming,
sat up in my room programming Janet Jackson songs and Michael Jackson songs, not knowing that that was the foray into production.
Right.
I was a nerd. I didn't know that that's what I was doing, but I spent 8 hours a day in my bedroom programming.
That's crazy. That's amazing.
So, you know.
Did you put together sounds, drum loops, all of it? Did you kind of...
Yeah, I would study stuff and do the bass lines and the drums. Obviously, I haven't heard it since then, so I don't know what it was really like in context.
Right.
But I took my giant PV amp into school and peed off my classical music teacher, you know, and turned it out really loud. And I guess that was the start of it.
So you were listening to Rhythm Nation, was that the record?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you were probably listening to Bad too.
Yes.
Thriller.
All those of were that. The records. Control.
Any English artists?
That's a really interesting question, actually.
Or were you just mesmerized by American pop music at the time?
Well, it was a real combination. I mean, I did love Wham, I have to say. did love them.
Dude, they were great.
Back in the day. And Five Star. I don't know if you know about
Five Star. I don't know Five Star. I'll have to go back.
Five Star were like five Michael and Janet Jacksons in one British group. And they were all siblings. The Pearsons. And I was obsessed with them.
I've never
you
even
should
heard
check
them
out.
I'll
they
totally
were just like Michael Jackson, but they were British. And there was five of them.
They're like, man, we're just we're the second fiddle compared to the Jackson 5.
Totally. But then my dad used to play a lot of Motown, all the girl groups he loved. Like, he loved Stevie Wonder and Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of that going on. And then my dad didn't want us to buy albums. So we would.
Why?
Because he was like, you get more tracks for less money and you can, you know,
he was
it's
ahead
better
of the time.
Value.
He was definitely ahead of the time.
Totally. He was like, just buy the album. Why are you bothering to buy the single? But me and my mum used to sneak out and buy the singles. And so we would buy, you know, Cyndi Lauper and Blondie and things like that.
The classics.
So I did a bit of both going on, the soul and then the pop rock. And yeah, it was good. My parents loved music.
You know what's funny? It's like you kind of grew up with the same pop stars that I did.
Yeah.
And when I think about how kids are growing up with pop stars today, I'm like, man, you just don't know. Like,
I know.
We had Michael Jackson. You know, had Janet Jackson. You know what I mean? We had Prince.
Superstars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like now it's like I don't see the same caliber of pop stars. I think it means the same to them. But
when I think
about it, like in the long term, I'm like, you know, in 20 years, 30 years, I think they're going to be like, wow, we kind of got a little cheated because that generation got Michael Jackson and Prince, you know?
It's like, yeah, I wonder if it's because it's harder. Like, if you were going to get a label to sign you, that meant they were going to spend a lot of money.
Right.
That meant you had to be really good.
Right.
You know, and I remember when, like, Top of the Pops, which was a UK chart show,
I know that show very well.
When I was a kid, you know, they would do a launch on like the next new Michael Jackson single or the new Madonna single. And it was always this huge, massive, magical, you know, big budget thing that you were so excited. You would wait days to watch it. And I think with the way technology is now, videos are nothing. Music is, everything's a click away. Like you don't have to gear yourself up for it and wait for it. And
even if it's
everywhere.
Phenomenal, it's very rare that people will make it to the end of the video.
It
would take time for them to really just get, you know, like, whereas when you had limited media, like we did, I mean, there was Top of the Pops, there was Soul Train, there was, you know, like Casey Kasem, whatever it is here, then it just has you showcase and get your attention. It has those artists showcase in a better way that it just hits us harder.
Agreed.
You know?
It was set up in such a special way because of the limitations.
Right. You know? Also think it's crazy. It's like the US and, you know, the UK, they both are kind of envious of each other in different generations because, like, you look at the 60s, it was all English. It was the British invasion. That's all that mattered was the British invasion. And then it's like the 70s, it comes back. It kind of flips back and forth.
That's so true.
Isn't that crazy? I've thought about this a lot because geography plays.
Same.
Yeah, well, it's still the same.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So you were taking piano lessons.
Yes.
And then when did you get serious about those piano lessons? And production.
I think I was always I would put in the minimum amount of practice. I would get away with a lot.
Right.
But I think I was serious when my dad said, you know, no one really cares about the keyboard player. You really need to try to sing something.
Right.
But I wasn't
smart.
Totally. I never considered myself to be a natural singer because I was the one playing for the choir.
Right.
Or playing for other people to sing. I was the piano player or the keyboard player. So then I was like, well, what good song can I sing that has minimum amount of vocals and lots of piano? And I learned Bruce Hornsby and the Rangers.
That's
just the way
song.
It is.
That's
and I learned piano solo.
I knew you were
going to
say that song, by the way.
Yeah, oh, you did?
Yeah.
And then I ended up being on this BBC show. Oh my gosh, I was 15. And it was like, it was kind of like a Search for a Star kind of thing. On a Saturday morning, it was nationwide. And I won my week. And then my best friend won her week. And then ultimately she won the whole thing.
So you had to go against each other? Is that
Which was crazy because I don't think that had ever happened. It was a countrywide thing. And we were from this tiny town in Wales. You know,
that's amazing. And you went to, when did you go to the Brit school?
The year after when I was 16.
And that was the famous school that it bred Adele, Amy Winehouse, Ellie Goulding, so many people.
Marsha Ambrosio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about the environment that you were kind of thrown into. Was it pushing composition, being original? Was it pushing technique? Was it stuck in that old way of classical music is everything?
No, not at all. It was a place where you could get your formal qualifications educationally, like, back then for me it was A-levels, you know, but you would study performing arts and then major in whatever you wanted to, whether that was media, acting, dance, or music. So I did all the music modules. I did music technology. And then it was really about what you did after school, though. I was in a band, I was in a girl group, I was in a duo.
That's
awesome. Know, I just did whatever I could, and you would get up in the morning, you know, travel for miles to get there, and then you would study, rehearse again, and then you'd leave school at 10 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And you do that for 2 years.
At 16 years old?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we really left home earlier than everybody else did, because most people in the UK, they go to university at 18.
Right.
So it was
uni.
Tough.
Don't you mean uni?
To uni, yes. To uni. So it was tough in that I was away from home, and it was a bit of a culture shock for me, because I'm a country girl, really.
Right.
But it was music, and so...
And did you feel like iron sharpens iron? You were just around a lot of creative people.
Yeah, that was the best
And you were
part
getting better, and it was, you were just around that environment that it pushed you harder, you know?
Definitely. The musicians that were there, I mean, I was classically trained, right? So then I was hanging out with jazz musicians, and they're calling out chord symbols and progressions and numbers, and 2, 4, 5, and A-7.
And you're
I'm like, what?
Yeah, right.
Where's the sheet music? And right. So I felt like I almost had to learn it all over again. But yeah, it was amazing. Very lucky.
And then when did you start writing songs?
I'd started writing a little bit before I went to the Brit School, got into it more at school, and then when I graduated, I thought I was going to go to Brighton University and just study more music, but I ended up getting a record deal and signed to RCA Records when I was 18.
That's amazing.
And then...
How did that come about?
There was a scout that came to the school, and I was in a girl group at the time, and they gave me a development deal because I was writing so many songs at that point and programming and getting into all that stuff. So, yeah, it was really strange. I was so shy in those days. I didn't really know what I had or what to do with it, to be honest with you, you know? I was like a little wallflower.
And then, so you get signed to this big record deal. You're young.
Yeah.
All your dreams are about to come true. And how was that experience? I'm sure it...
I think I was scared out of my mind.
It was a circus, I'm sure.
I was so scared and so shy. Like, they used to send me to New York, and the first couple of trips, I didn't want to leave the hotel room. You know, I was so different. And you listen to everybody, and you try to be a team player. And it's so tricky because, and this is what I would say to younger artists coming up now, is try to have a really good sense of identity and a sense of self, which is really difficult at 18.
Yes.
Like, no one
yes.
knows what they're doing.
Of course.
And if you can balance that with a little bit of humility, because you don't want to go the other way and be like, I know everything and I'm not listening to anybody.
Right.
But if you're too much listening to everybody's opinion, you get lost.
Right.
And I think that's what happened. And so for me, it was great development. I spent a boatload of money there, which I didn't have to pay back. And
that's nice.
You know, it got into production from there because I literally had a wish list of all the people I wanted to work with, and they made it happen.
Like?
Like David Gampson, who used to be in a band called Scritti Politti, and he produced Michelle and Dagio Cello's albums.
Nice.
And I was obsessed with her. Everybody was in the Brit School at that time. They were obsessed with her. And he brought her onto one of the songs we did.
Wow.
Which is Dream Come True. And then he also brought in musicians like Wawa Watson, who played on Off the Wall album, a lot of Michael Jackson records, the Sea Wind Horns, who also played on Quincy Jones records and Michael Jackson. Just so many dream scenarios. Bob Power was mixing the record. He's the engineer on all the neo-soul stuff like Tribal Quest, Erykah Badu. And so that was my world at the time. But I didn't put out a record.
Why?
Well, it was weird. When by the time I left, my A&R, who was Take That's A&R, which is a
so he just ran with that, I'm sure, right?
He didn't get what I was trying to do, and he said that he was. It concerned him that a white girl with blonde hair from Wales was doing R&B.
Oh, God. Really?
Yeah. And then right after he said that, I feel like pretty much the next day, like, Christina Aguilera came out.
And you're like, see? Look, she's doing it.
But, you know, everything for a reason. You know,
well, you know what I find is, and this goes to every A&R out there in the business, I find that musicians go through a rigorous amount of training to get to where they are, mm-hmm. only to have to appease people that have no music training and lack a lot of vision. Yeah. I've seen it time and time again with every. Yeah. I've yet to meet a music industry guy, and I've met Clive Davis. I've met some of the biggest of all of them. I've yet to meet an A&R or an industry tycoon that really has their shit together when it comes to music. That can relate to me on a level of music that I'm like, oh, you know what you're doing. You really know what you're doing. Because for every hit they've got 500 misses. They've got thousands of misses.
Oh, definitely. I think that there's a lot of fear there as well because they have to justify the money that they spend.
Right.
And that's scary a lot of the time. So that's why you get so many carbon copies or so many producers that just do the same records over and over. They have a stable of people they use. Because it's kind of safer. So there's a few trailblazers, but those guys are few, I think.
Well, and that's also like, if I throw $4 million at this artist and I throw $100,000 at this artist, I know which artist is going to get the radio airplay. I know which artist is going to sell the records. Mm-hmm. It's if you really want to even the tables and see what is going to really hit, throw the same amount of money to both artists.
Totally.
And that's what is not happening.
And then let the people speak.
Yes, let the people speak.
Absolutely.
Because you'll see how many people, like the one thing that I find that's frustrating with music, it's people are sheep. You know, they just want to be told what to listen to. So you can have the dumbest song playing and you'll hear that high school kid or that college school kid singing it. The ones that I find that really understand music are the ones searching for music.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? That really love it and are well-versed in how the progression of music has come. You know, like, it's come around full circle in so many ways.
And it always does. It goes in cycles, right?
Right, yeah.
I have to say, you know, that being said, there was one A&R that a few years later gave me my first break in production because he was the opposite of that. He was a trailblazer and he just wanted to sign good music and he wanted to let people write and produce it that would good, you know, regardless of if you'd made a record before. And his name was Jaha Johnson and he ran Def Jam and he came over to the UK to start Def Jam UK and started with an artist called Terry Walker. And he basically said to me, I feel kind of bad for you because you can make this music that people aren't putting money into, plus you're a girl, you know, I feel bad for you. But I trust you. Here's some money. Do you need more? What do you need? What do you want? Strings? What other musicians do you want? He basically let me do whatever
amazing.
I want.
That's amazing.
And produced a couple songs on his first signings album. And we got nominated for the Mercury Music Prize back then.
Wow.
And it was just amazing. We were very, very lucky to have an A&R that had such trust in the art of it and the
that's
content.
How it should be.
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
Regardless of any outside forces like publicity. I mean, that would be so difficult now because you'd need a gazillion Instagram followers or whatever the case may be in order to get anywhere near that. But he was like, Sammy, I trust you and I love these songs and I love what you're doing. I know you just need a bit of money behind it. Let's do it.
Well, let's get to a song. We'll talk more about this in a second. But what do you want to play first?
Well, it depends. Do you want to go fun or do you want to go serious?
I want to go SJ.
All right, let's start with, seeing as we're talking about just music and making music, let's go with On Repeat.
All right.
Which is just really fun and it's about, you know, having a crush. Like the way you feel when you discover that first song. I just want to play you over and over and over again.
That's the best feeling ever.
And apply that to a person.
I love it.
Here we go.
Here's SJ on repeat.
Hey,
of all, awesome work on production. Yeah, I love the mix. I love the vocals. I love the harmonies.
Thank you.
Harmony is like my favorite thing to sing.
I'm big on harmonies.
Me too. Oh my God, we're going to get along great.
The more complex the better.
No, that's what I like too. It's crazy. It's like, but you know what's disappointing? Pop music doesn't really have a lot of melodic harmonization now. It's like going to the four chords, a big deal now. I'm like, what? It's not right. A big deal.
I know. I'm waiting for those. I think it's coming, though, because I'm loving the alternative chill R&B that's happening right now. And that's drawing on a lot of the 90s stuff,
right?
Which is where I came up. So, you know, Faith Evans, D'Angelo, all of that
right.
kind of thing.
That's all the good stuff.
Yeah.
So we were talking a little bit off the air about when you made the big trek to the U.S.
Mm.
Tell me what that was like, and what was the mesmerizing moment about this city that made you want to pack your bags and lay it all on the line and come to Los Angeles?
Well, it's weird because I'd been coming to L.A. for quite a while before I moved here over the years. And I would keep trying to find reasons to come back. You know, we'd be making a record in the U.K. and I'd be like, we should really mix this in L.A. You know, whether we should or not was a different thing. I just had the ulterior motives to just get back to L.A. But it was strange. The minute I stepped off the plane on my first trip, I loved it. I felt like a very strange spiritual connection here. I felt like I could really be myself and thrive internally, spiritually, and musically. And I said to myself, if I came here and I just was a waitress and that's all I did, I would still be happy.
Yeah.
So people always ask this question in LA, like, oh, well, they don't say, hi, how are you? And then 2 weeks later, what do you do? It's like, hi, what do you do?
Right.
Why are you here?
Right.
Did you come to make it in something?
Right.
Like, I came to make it in life because it's sunny.
Right. It's the best city on the planet. I mean, really.
I just love it. I really do. And I think that, I guess at the time I was so over London. No offense. I do love London. And I love my London people. But it's a hard city.
It's like
New York
and London are same in kind of weather, same in the kind of like the grind.
Congested.
It's a hard city. It hardens you. The city hardens you.
They're such both a hard... good for like your 20s. I think when you're in your 20s, you should live in London or New York and do it.
Yep.
But then as you get older, you kind of want to balance that quality of life thing.
Yeah.
And so me being from Wales, I needed to see the horizon. I needed to see the mountains and open spaces. And in LA, you get all that stuff, but you're still in the mix. So for me, it's perfect.
That's what I love about it. I love to travel, but it's like I keep coming back to LA and I'm like, there's nothing the city's missing. It's got everything. It's got the weather. It's got the bustling music industry.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need it all the time.
No.
To be able to enjoy the city. It's like you can go to the beach and go see. I mean, I just went and did. I've got a bunch of family in town right now. I just went and did so many things that I haven't done in the city. Little things like going to the Warner Brothers studios and just doing a tour.
A lot.
And I'm like, I've been here my whole life and I've never done that. And I was like, this city has so many.
It's
things.
So much. People say that, like, oh, there's no culture, there's no architecture. But when you live here and you go exploring, there's so much.
Yes.
There's different microcosms of cultures. There's so many different people that the architecture. I'm a big Art Deco fan.
Yeah.
So I'm obsessed with those buildings downtown and Carthay Circle. One of these days I'm going to get an Art Deco home.
Do it.
You know, I love that
stuff. It's expensive, but do it. No, there's something about it. It's one of the tastemakers of the entire world, really.
Yeah.
LA, Paris, London, not in that order, New York. They're all like tastemakers for the world, for pop culture in so many ways.
I agree. We're really lucky to live here.
So tell me, you said you were in a rock band that was like Linkin Park.
I was.
And then you reinvented yourself. Tell me what made you come back to pop music and want to make more dance music.
It's really strange with the dance music thing because I didn't seek it out. It just kept finding me and people kept asking me to make dance records. But I never tried to get into dance. It's really odd. So let's see. So early 2000s, I don't know if you're familiar with the UK garage scene.
Yeah, of course.
Massive scene, and it's had a resurgence lately as well. I wrote a couple records that were big back in those days. There was a song called Things We Do For Love by Kelly LaRocque that is still a banger now. They play it all the time. And then I started working with artists like Mystique and... Booty Love. I don't know if you know that. It's a great name. And anyway, I never purposely said I want to do dance music, but people kept coming back to me and asking me to write this stuff or produce it, and I just had a knack for it. I'm really not sure how. But when I came to LA, I'd been in this rock band because I just love music. I love all kinds of music.
Me too. I'm the same way.
I don't like being boxed in to one thing. And, you know, all the managers and A&Rs are probably going to say, oh, you have to brand yourself, blah, blah, blah. And people need to know what you are so they can understand it and not be confused. But I just love music.
Yes.
And so I dyed my hair bright red and got some awesome musicians together in London. Leon, Ryan and Pete. Big up. And we had a band called Ilion, and we were just so energetic and so banging, and I learned how to growl, and I would jump up and down on stage in heels, mind you.
Wow.
I did heels and pencil skirts.
Oh my goodness.
Prog rock metal, but I wanted to like make it all like glam. And we came out here and we did like the Roxy, the Viper Room, the Whiskey, that whole Sunset Strip thing.
Right.
And I ended up meeting a couple of people that were expats, and they were like, go and see an immigration lawyer, see what you can do. And 5 months later, I packed my bags and moved out.
That's crazy. I love stories like that. See, I'm from here, so it's like, I just grew up in Pasadena. So it was like going to LA, it's like, oh, go a half an hour, and
that's
now I'm
awesome.
In LA, you know? So it wasn't that big of this huge journey, but that's what I love hearing, because this is what the city is so great about. It brings so many great artists
it
kind of like tests all artists too, you know.
It does, because there's a lot of stuff that people can get into that will take them down the rabbit hole.
Yes.
You know, I think I'm glad that I came here when I was a little bit older and not when I was 21.
Right.
Or the first year I think I came out here, I was 21, 22. I think moving when you're that young would be incredibly difficult.
Because any of your vices are right around the
corner. Yeah, you could fall prey to many things.
Yes.
Exactly, like everything is available here. And I think people go into a time warp and they forget why they came, and 10 years goes by and they haven't done anything, you know?
Let's talk about some of the people that you've worked with, because you've worked with some awesome, awesome people. Tell us about working with Rafael Sadiq.
He's awesome. He's one of my really good friends. And I met him a long time ago when he hired me to vocal produce Rod Stewart.
I sang for his wedding, by the way.
Rod Stewart's wedding? Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
When I was a kid.
Isn't he awesome?
He's
so awesome. So Raphael had hired me to do that. And then we had worked a few times over the years. He's on the new record also. And he recently trusted me with doing a few cues on a movie he was scoring called The After Party, which is out on Netflix right now.
Awesome.
And I love scoring to picture. And I'd done a few bits and pieces, but I'd never done a movie. And so he gave me the chance to score a movie. And so I did about 10 or 12 cues on that.
Awesome.
So yeah, we should be doing some more in that line of work, which is so much fun.
He's
hard work.
He's one of my
work,
favorite artists, too. I played Bonnaroo with him in 2008 or 9, I think, 2009.
Mm.
But I've been listening to him since Tony.
Yep.
Old school. That's the old school stuff. So he's such a badass.
He's so inspiring. He just makes you want to be better and do better.
Right.
You know, as a musician, as a friend, as an artist, just as a human being.
Right.
He's just an all-around good guy.
So did he influence you in styles, or did you influence him in styles?
No.
Like a mishmash?
Oh, no. I don't think I influenced him at all.
You'd be surprised. That's how music kind of works.
He definitely influenced me. I had times where I felt, you know, sad and uninspired, and I would put on one of his records and it would change everything. So,
right.
You know.
He's one of those artists, it's like you see him and they change the vibe in the room.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Yes.
Everything is just lifts, you know. It's like, I just saw Maxwell. Do you know Maxwell?
Yes.
So I just saw Maxwell this weekend, and I've been wanting to see him since Urban Hang Suite came out. I've never seen him live. And it's just like, he's 45 doing splits and doing all this crazy stuff like Prince. I'm like, dude, this is crazy. And he does the same thing, just totally carries a whole room into
that
the palm of his hand.
That album was a game changer when it came out.
Big time.
And that's the thing, you know, we have to stop telling ourselves that we have an expiration date.
Right.
Because we don't.
Nope.
You know, you spend so much time honing your craft as a serious musician that you can't possibly be your best self at 25.
No way. You're barely a person.
You're barely a person. It's true. I think, isn't it true in boys, the frontal cortex isn't even fully developed until you're 26?
I'm sure my frontal cortex is not fully developed at 39. So, it's very true.
So, I just think if you could take anything away from what we're talking about is be true to yourself, and you never have to run out of time. Like, you're never too old. Life is just, you can do what you want, and artists like Raphael and Maxwell and Stevie Wonder and Mick Jagger, Sheryl Crow didn't even start her record deal till she was 32.
Well, and like some of those artists you just mentioned, they didn't have their best songs.
No.
Until their 30s, 40s, 40s and beyond.
And beyond. You know what I mean? Yeah. So music is music.
Yes.
And it's like a divine channeling of something that maybe we don't understand, but every now and then we tap into it and it comes through. And that has nothing to do with how old you are, what gender you are, where you're from. It's just a light.
That's a perfect segue into our next song, which is...
Grace.
All right. This is SJ with Grace. I got to tell you, I love the feel. You got great feel. That is
4-year-old Sammy coming out.
You know what? I'll tell you, it's all about feel. Like, yeah, you can have the same 10, you can have 10 musicians playing the same figure, mm-hmm. and they will all play it differently. And feel is everything.
You know who's a really good example of that I've played with, who's played on some of my records before is, do you know a bass player called Pino Palladino?
Oh my God, I just met him.
You did? Isn't he awesome?
He was at a coffee shop down the street. We live a mile from each other.
Oh my, you know he's Welsh too, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's a perfect example.
He's the best.
Feel. He's self-taught, like he doesn't read.
He doesn't read, I know.
But
it's all ear.
It's feel. And he's played on some of the most soulful records that
D'Angelo,
have ever been out.
Even John Mayer's trio.
Yeah, exactly.
Continuum
played
record.
With The Who.
Yep.
I mean, he is
he
just
did Nine
so
Inch Nails.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. He
did
was,
he?
He, was, he did all the Nine Inch Nails stuff.
I did not know that.
The last like 5-6 years. Yeah. He's been on
wow.
every tour. I'm like a Pino Palladino freak.
Right.
Like, I don't get star. I was more starstruck to meet Pino Palladino than Quincy Jones.
Oh, yeah, I hear you.
Pino Palladino is, because he's the real deal. Quincy
he's
doesn't
the
play
real
anymore.
Deal.
Pino Palladino is still playing the Mamma Jamma. I mean, he's like
the bass
player.
And he's so unexpected. Like, he's this tall, skinny Welsh dude
yeah.
who just turns up and he's like, all right, love. How's it going?
and he's so killing and nonchalant about it. It's
yeah.
Like, I told him I'd work with Ziggy Marley, and he was like,
oh, nice.
Hey, man, tell Ziggy I said what's up. And I'm like, this is crazy. I'm having like a buddy chat. With, I'm like, sure, yeah, let's do it. And I'll meet you at the same coffee joint.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Friends?
So, yeah, he is the bomb.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Agreed.
What
yeah.
track did you do with him?
So he played on some of the Terry Walker stuff that I mentioned on Def Jam.
Right.
On Terry's first record, Untitled. And then he and I wrote some stuff for what was going to be my solo record many years ago that I might, you know, rehash. I still
nice.
Have some of the files, Pino.
There you go.
You might get a
small
call.
Small world.
So, yeah, there was a few bits and pieces when we were all living in London. And so, yeah, there might be some stuff in the bag that will come out still.
We're going to have to collaborate. I'm gonna email Pino tonight and just
do
say,
it.
Hey, man, we're all three now going to collaborate.
Oh, that'd be
amazing. The twosome just turned into a threesome.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
That would be great.
All right, so what are you going to play next? Let's play another track.
Let's see. Oh, let's play. There's a song called Acid Rain. So there is a songwriter in LA called Hele, and she's one of my closest friends. She's super talented, a singer-songwriter, crazy talented. I don't think she realizes how talented she is.
Those are the best.
You know, she's super humble. And
not crazy, I hope.
Not at all.
Because sometimes
the
ones
crazy.
That are so ridiculously good
oh,
and don't know it
bonkers.
Can be crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So you just hit the trifecta. That's like,
oh, yeah.
That's called a unicorn.
Hillary's a unicorn.
Okay, all right.
And so we did this song called Acid Rain, which is a very emotional song for her. And it actually went through so many different skins before it got to this. It was dance, then it was piano song, and now it's sort of this 80s synthwave thing that I'm really into right now.
Let's hear it. Acid Rain, SJ featuring Hilaire.
Something you
It's like a little bit of new wave, a little bit of house, a little bit of hip hop.
Yeah, and I have to big up Sven Atherton for that. He's a British engineer who mixed that and helped me, you know, put some sparkle on it. So big up Sven.
Killing mix. Killing
yeah,
song.
Yeah, he's a really good
killing
mix
vocal,
guy.
Killing vocal, killing synths.
Thanks.
I love it all. Just Thank makes you. Me want to boogie.
Woohoo.
Boogie. So we were talking about who you're listening to now.
Yeah.
This is a good question because you know what? If you could shed some light or a spotlight on some artists that you think people need to listen to, who would they be? Besides SJ, of
Besides
course.
Besides me. I really like an artist out of the UK called Nao, N-A-O. She's awesome. And I love Anderson .Paak, even though everybody knows about him, so he doesn't need much picking
and he's
up.
So
but
badass.
I love him.
He plays drums and sings. It's like
I saw him at FYF last year, and apart from one song in an hour and a half set, he sang and played drums all at the same time on every song.
He's a badass.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's a badass.
I haven't seen anyone do that since Stokely of Mint Condition. He's the only other person I can
think
of.
Well, Don Henley, but not the whole gig. He wouldn't
not
do that.
The whole gig.
No, that's what's
and rapping and everything.
Yeah.
Like.
No, it's silly.
So he's awesome. And then I really like this new group that Common's got called August Green. I'm quite into them. There's a lot of stuff. I like her, H-E-R. Let's see. I like Kailala quite a lot. Like the sort of, you know, the chill alternative R&B stuff that's happening. But then I'll do all that and then I'll go and listen to Ludovic Einaudi or Sheryl Crow.
Right.
I always have Sheryl Crow in my car.
She's
like,
awesome.
She's such a good songwriter. Like, I love her.
She's so bitchin'.
Yeah.
I saw her play a concert with the Dalai Lama of all people.
What?
Yeah. He was speaking and she was playing. This is like maybe 6 years ago.
Where?
Yeah, it was at Universal Amphitheater, which is where Universal Studios.
Yes.
And it was amazing. It was one of those weird moments. Like, this is how powerful the Dalai Lama is. It was raining when I walked in. He spoke. She played. We walked out, and it was like sunny skies. I was like, all right, this is convinced me of anything that
I love
music
that.
And philosophy can change everything.
Oh, you know? Yes.
Which you can. And you're doing that. You're doing that. Where can people find you if they want you to produce?
Oh,
or write or sing.
You can hit me up on Facebook or Instagram or any of the usual.
What are the handles? Lay it on us.
SJ Official for everything.
Spell it out because people are dumb.
So it's SJE Official. Do you need me to spell official?
No.
People aren't that
well,
dumb.
Maybe. Yeah. No. You know what? Spell it out. Let me test your spelling.
Go to SJ Official on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. I will 100% get back to you. Sometimes I miss that little weird black hole of message requests.
Right.
Sometimes, but I will absolutely get back to you. Or you could just write it in the comments and I'll hit you back 100%.
And you're about to release this EP soon, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so I was going to do it before Christmas, but I've decided I'm going to do it more middle to end of February. I did a Kickstarter, which I was super nervous and slightly mortified about because you're basically asking people for money.
Right.
But I got some great support, and so I'm going to put that money into PR and marketing because everything else is done.
Smart.
Yeah, so February, March, but there's bits and bobs out there.
And what about performances? Are you going to play out live? Are you kind of like, I don't want to do that. I'll let you guys just listen first.
I don't know. I probably will because I do enjoy it, but I haven't done it. Have I done it this year? I can't remember, actually. I do like just sort of sitting there with the piano and singing.
It's the best.
Quite a lot.
It's the best.
You know, but if I can rally some of the featured artists to do a little show, that would be cool.
That's what you should do. Yeah. I think we're just cooking it up right now.
I think so.
See? Get you back
artists.
On the Sunset Strip.
Yeah, right.
See? You know what? It's one of those terminals that it's like, it always brings you back.
I love it.
It's one of my favorite. I used to play the House of Blues all the time.
Oh,
I used to headline the House
Blues.
Of Blues. This was my venue. Now they've torn it down.
I know.
And I'm trying to find another venue that's like that. And there's nothing like
there
that.
There won't be anywhere like that.
I know. It bums me out.
You can't do it.
But we won't be depressed about that.
No.
We've got too much music to light up our lives with. One more time, SJ Official.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to release this record end of February. Yeah. What's it going to be called? Do you know?
I don't know yet.
That's a great title.
Well, the first record I ever produced was an album called Untitled,
So you can't use that one.
I can't use that. We'll see.
My vote is Grace.
I am thinking Grace, to be honest.
It's a pretty strong title.
And I think that song is such a special song. I might write a few more and sneak them on. Maybe it'll end up being an album and not an EP.
I think that is a great title. I'm just saying, I love titles.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one. That's my vote.
I like it.
But you know what? We're going to have you back.
Awesome.
You've been
I'd
an
love
amazing guest.
Thank you.
You are a very talented artist that has done the homework.
Oh, thanks.
I don't say those words very often because most people don't do the homework.
Right.
But you write, you play, you produce, mm-hmm. you sing, you know the craft, you build
yeah.
tracks, you build beats. You're doing it all. This is why we do the show, to showcase artists like yourself.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me.
Of course. Well, you're coming.
Really
I'm saying you're coming
it.
Back in about 9-10 months.
Yeah.
And we want to talk about your record release, what
Amazing.
You're doing. You're probably going to be doing videos, et cetera, et cetera. Hitting the superstar channels, you know, that you will probably are destined for. But in the meantime, you and I are going to collaborate. I'm putting
yes,
it on tape.
Let's do it.
And you're going to come back in 9 months. And Eddie will be here too. And
fantastic.
We'll do this all over again.
I would love that. Thank
SJ
you so much.
Official for all things pop related and music related. Hit her up. She will respond.
I will.
On behalf of Eddie and myself, we'll see you guys here next week.